message.
You can see, like I said last month, he does a good job at reading these down. But you can see here in our big top funds, kind of where we sit today. And he's got a note at the bottom saying that we approved a transfer that we're going to amend in this meeting that was left off of this report right here. On our next sheet, we've got the bright blue line there at the top in the middle. It says we're about $500,000 above 2022, but it's mostly an ad valorem tax. He said he doesn't trust it until after October, which is when all those are due. The biggest thing that you'll see on this next sheet is that for the first time in a while, we have a negative number there. We're down 1.71% in our sales tax collections. And when I saw that, I just asked myself a question, and I went back through this whole sheet. There are maybe about four or five other instances where we had we were negative from the month the year before. But he said he's working on figuring out really the why of why we're down. Any questions on that? And 4.4% to date from last year on increase in sales tax revenue. And then the next sheet, you see that we are 71% of what we're projected to bring in from sales tax revenue. Let's see. And then the last sheet is the 3 month is above the 1 year moving average, but they're both turned down. So that's when he likes to keep a close eye on things, is when they're both turned in a downward direction. Anyone have any questions on that? I can't guarantee a correct answer, a good answer. All right. So we've got new business, proposed amended ordinance 23-23. Do I have a motion for this one?
Make a motion we put amended ordinance 23-23 on the table for discussion.
Second.
All right. We've got a motion and a second. So this ordinance is one we passed last month, but it had an issue on it. It had something wrong. Are you the best person to explain, or who's the...
I can do my best.
Okay.
I think there were two different errors that were really Scrivener's errors on... one is in Section 1, and the other is on Section 3. The first Scrivener's error is regard to the Juvenile Drug Court Grant Fund. I think the issue there was simply the number was not correct, so that's been changed to the correct fund number. And then in Section 3, I think the issue had to do with... the expenditure code that it was put into, and maybe even the department. Once again, does it change the amount that's being appropriated? It's just an accounting issue into which fund. So it's the same numbers. Nothing's been increased as far as the dollar amount. It's just putting it into the right accounting fund number.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you. And then our county administrator told me that Section 2 is really not supposed to be on here at all. So do we want to have an amendment to take out Section 2 from this ordinance?
Make a motion to remove Section 2.
Second.
All right, any discussion on that point, on the amendment?
What's the reasoning for why is that not supposed to be amended?
Section 2 will be covered in the next ordinance, so it's kind of a double. It was in both ordinances, so it doesn't need to be in this one.
Thank you.
All in favor of the motion to amend to take out Section 2, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, we've amended it and took out Section 2. All right, any more discussion on this as a whole? If you'll remember, Section 3, the $300,000 was basically covering some issues with the criminal justice building that insurance is going to come back and reimburse. All right, with no other questions, all in favor of passing amended ordinance 23-23 to the full court, say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right. All right, do I have a motion on our next proposed ordinance 23-25?
I'll make a motion to put proposed ordinance 2325 on the table for discussion.
Second.
All right, we've got a motion and a second. I'll give us all a minute to look over this and see if anyone has any questions on any of these sections. I'll ask a question. I'll be the first one to ask a question. I want to ask a question about the two big amounts are for the our maintenance department.
Justice, I assume you're referring to Section 8 and Section 9?
Yes, correct. Thank you.
If I can take those one at a time, I'll start with Section 8. This is pretty simple. This is just a page of our general ledger from our maintenance department. You can see the arrow. It's just real simple to follow in line, let's see, let me follow back over there. 2022, which is plumbing and electrical, has a balance of $35,000. And we're moving it down to line 3009, other professional services, because we already have a deficit of $8,000. So I need to move that. It's just an internal transfer within the maintenance department, but since it's crossing over to those to the 2,000s to the 3,000s, we have to have you guys do that approval. So it's just moving around so that we can pay some bills.
Is that Section 8 and 9?
No, nope, that's Section 8. I'll do Section 9 separate if you're ready for it. Mm-hmm.
Yep, correct.
All right, Justices, you've probably heard me the last couple of months talk about air conditioning across the campus. So I worked up a little spreadsheet for you to show our expenditures to date this summer. So the far left column, that is a column of all the individual invoices for air conditioning repairs just at the Justice Building. That totals $13,834.52. And then the next column is AC repairs around the campus. That's just a lot of different places that would work. That's an additional $9,562. The third column, these are actually air conditioner replacements. That adds up to $73,753. And our line item for the department that actually pays for this, the budget for that is... $61,950. So we've got $61,000 to spend on our maintenance and service repairs. If you look on the previous sheet that I gave you, that's going to be line 2024. And so far of a budget of $61,000, we've already spent $97,000, or about to spend $97,000. So what I'm asking for is a $50,000 appropriation to cover the three air conditioning units you can see in column three that says not paid. We need to pay those this month, and that'll cover those and still leave me a little bit of money in the maintenance and services, because that maintenance and services covers other things. I mean, when a lawnmower goes down, when we have other pieces of equipment that need to be repaired, and we still have, 4 months left in the year. So this will basically pay for those air conditioning units. That pretty clear?
I know I met our new maintenance director when we had the 150-year celebration, and I think in my conversations with you, he has been about 100 miles an hour ever since then.
Yeah, he's up to 110 now.
Okay. With all the broken ACs.
With the water leak today, he's picked up his speed.
I have a question, Trent.
Yes, sir.
So with just clarification here, it's coming out of general. Is this the exact balance on the Scott sheet that we're seeing with the $50,000 deducted from it, or will we get a new sheet? Because it's coming from the county general, I understand it, right, the $50,000?
Yeah, this does not include anything that we would pass tonight.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
That's good. That's good call out on how to use this sheet. Just in case y'all haven't seen. So if you go down here to the second block on your sheet, you can see the amount at the bottom far right, amount not appropriated. So that's basically in county general, if you follow that down the line, we've got $2,373,000 that we have not appropriated somewhere. That's just kind of sitting there hanging out for
Thank
stuff
you,
like
Treasurer.
This.
Thank you, Treasurer.
Yes, you're welcome. Any more questions on any more of the proposed ordinance 23-25? Justice Roberts, I'll just say, since you're new, if we look at like section 5, a lot of times what this type of stuff is, when you see $269 is anticipated or projected, that means a lot of times we're getting some sort of reimbursement back or some sort of programs going on where this money's coming in because of something that, in this case, the OEM 911 shop did, and that's why that money's going right back into their account, if that makes sense. All right.
I have a question. I'm sorry, this is probably
yes,
back.
Ma'am.
Ms. Gray, there were a number of homes that were flooded during the 2019 flood, and so this county at that time participated in a project with FEMA in which the federal government essentially provided money to purchase those homes. Those homes have since been demolished, then razed to the ground, and so I think this that particular deal is in regards to finalizing that program, the last house remaining.
Any more questions? All right, all in favor of passage of proposed ordinance 23-25 to the full court, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, that passes on to the full court. All right, next on our agenda, we have proposed ordinance 23-26. This ordinance establishes the sheriff's office. Let me see here. I got this written down here somewhere. Establishes the overdose response team. Now, and let me talk to the committee about this for a second. Because this is an ordinance that establishes two new positions. It establishes and funds two new positions within the sheriff's office. What we normally do here, the protocol has been for these to go through personnel committee first before they're taken up by budget. So if I don't hear any objections from our budget and finance committee, what my plan is to be is this is another reminder, we're not meeting next Tuesday for full court because of the fair parade. We're meeting next Thursday. So I would plan to, if this passes out of personnel, I'll plan a meeting for 5:45 next Thursday for budget to meet and to take up proposed ordinance 23-26. Any objection or questions?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. So just a couple of announcements. We, I think, officially began the budgeting process for 2024, which means Tom Anderson took all the budgets and past budgets and shot them out to all the department heads and elected officials and said, y'all put y'all's budgets together that you want to see for 2024. So at the beginning of October, those will all come back to the judge's office. They'll put all that information together, and compile it in a way that makes sense for us to digest. And as soon as they have that information to me, we'll make it available to y'all so y'all can start seeing it and reviewing it and, asking questions about it and everything. My plan, and I think I told y'all this before, my plan is to hold budget and finance committee meetings because we need to have a series of meetings to review all these budgets every Tuesday and Thursday in November leading up to the week of Thanksgiving. I don't want to meet the week. We'll already be meeting that third Tuesday for quorum court. But meet every Tuesday and Thursday in November, and we'll set schedules. We'll say, like, these we're going to hear these budgets on this day and these budgets on this day. and make it kosher for everybody. But that's the plan right now. And we're going to share all the information we can. And if you need to see information in any other way, you just have to let us, me, myself, or someone from the judge's office know so we can present it in a way that makes sense for you to process and be able to ask questions and everything. Do you have any other budget questions right now?
I can answer them.
What do you mean? Yes.
I have a question about this.
You have a question about that? Yeah, go ahead.
So is this about 2026, this ordinance?
Yeah, we're not taking it up, but you can ask a question about it if you want to.
I was just confused by the layout. So Justice Kendrick, I guess, is the sponsor of it, but and this is just kind of, I'm just a curious person by nature. I noticed here that it's one of the physicians is a recovery specialist. And so in my experience in that world of recovery, that means someone who has successfully been through recovery themselves. Is that something that someone can speak to? Is that the route you're taking? And if so, would there be some sort of management on that? Because I've also had some not so good experiences with that, so I'm just curious about that.
Justice Tyler, I might ask you to hold that question until we have our discussion over that position and personnel, because it'll probably get addressed. But
okay, that's fair. I thought it was going to be
because personnel needs next.
Okay, no problem.
I'm glad you mentioned that. And just to fill y'all in, because at least talking to that, I'm going to ignore Jake because y'all are the new JPs. In personnel committee, I think this is personnel. Just looking at the, I just want to explain to y'all. When you look at on their agenda, it says proposed committee resolution is what it says. And you probably haven't seen that before yet this year. So in the past, what we've sometimes done with some of the raise requests that we have taken up in October is a committee resolution, which basically says this committee approves these raises. We approve for you to put these raises into your budget, into the 2024 budget process. So it's not approving them to be passed tonight and go into effect, you know what I'm saying, as soon as the ordinance is passed. It's more of a, we approve you to put these into your budgeting process. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Back when I first came on the court, there was a lot of discussion and disagreements on, during the budgeting process, elected officials putting raises for their people in with the whole budget as a whole. And the quorum court said, no, that needs to be something that's looked at separate. And so this is kind of a solution to that. Okay. Do y'all have any other announcements or questions before we adjourn Budget and Finance? All right. Budget and Finance Committee is adjourned.
Okay, everybody. We're going to call the personnel meeting to order. Just going through the agenda items here. I don't have any special reports. I don't have any old business, so we'll just get into new business. Just a couple of notes I wanted to talk about before we hop into this new business. This one's really for the committee, but we will have a meeting in October to consider a couple of requests that couldn't make it tonight. The county clerk and our county treasurer are both at AAC conferences, and they asked if they could move that till next month, and I didn't have an issue with that. And I think we're also going to have a couple of personnel manual updates that will probably be coming before the committee. And really, before we jump in here, we've got a lot of stuff to go through, so we'll try to get moving on it. But really, the goal of these requests are to keep all our county employees in line with the Class 6 averages. And some of those, we've been going here lately, trying to keep it within the comparable counties, so the top two or three Class 6 counties. And we do that a couple ways, through raise requests like this and COLAs. So that's really what we're looking at. We're going to work our way through this. As we do this, I'll have the elected officials or the managers come up. You can present your requests that we're going through. We can discuss the Class 6 averages if you have any comparable top two or anything outside of that, and then we'll open it up for discussion as far as that goes. So with that getting started, I'll take a motion for proposed ordinance 2326.
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay. Counselor, if you would read 2326 for us, please.
Ordinance Ordinance 23-26, sponsored by Justice Chris Kendrick, being enacted by the Quorum Court, Faulkner County, State of Arkansas, an ordinance to be entitled, an ordinance to create one full-time investigative position and one full-time peer recovery specialist position in the Faulkner County Sheriff's Office to create an overdose response team as part of the Arkansas Opioid Recovery Partnership. Whereas the Faulkner County Sheriff's Office was selected to participate in the AROP supplemental funding and to establish an ORT, and whereas the Faulkner County Sheriff's Office will assume all financial obligations, reporting, and staffing for the AROP award funding, number AROP 23-126 program for 2 years, that's from September 1st, 2023 to September 1st, 2025. And whereas the AROP was created to distribute settlement funds to projects that will abate the opioid epidemic through prevention, treatment, and recovery. And whereas the Faulkner County Sheriff's Office is in need of 2 full-time employees, equipment, and training in order to establish their ORT. And whereas the Faulkner County Sheriff's Office is committing an investigator specialized in narcotics investigations and a PRS to solely respond to fatal and non-fatal overdoses for the duration of this grant opportunity with the responsibilities and expectations set forth in the AROP within Faulkner County. Now, therefore, be it ordained by the Quorum Court, Faulkner County, Arkansas, Section 1. One new position for an investigator is created in the Criminal Justice Fund, 3407, Department 0450, position number 1101. The salary for this position is $45,976.32. Section 2. One new position for a peer recovery specialist is created in the Criminal Justice Fund, 3407, Department 0450, position number 1102. The salary for this position is $30,000. Section 3. $55,566.65 is appropriated from the Criminal Justice Fund to Department 0450 AROP ORT as follows: $23,377.36, $1,001 salaries full time, $1,788.37 to Department 1006 Social Security matching, $3,581.42 to 1007 retirement matching, $6,700 to 1009 health insurance, $656.15 to workers' comp insurance, that's fund 1010. $163.65 to 1011 unemployment, $68 to 1016 life insurance, $267.36 to 1019 dental vision, $18,964.34 to 3093 miscellaneous law enforcement equipment. Section 4, emergency clause. The adoption of this ordinance is an emergency, and therefore an emergency is hereby declared to exist, and this ordinance shall be in full force and effect immediately upon passage and approval, passed by the Quorum Court on September
21st, 2023. Thank you, Counselor. So I was excited about this when the Sheriff's Department brought this to me. This is, what this is some of the litigation that's been dealing with the opioid epidemic. Arkansas took a unique approach, and they decided that instead of every county, every municipality, the state, and every other organization opened a lawsuit, they all joined together and did it. And Arkansas was one of the first ones in the nation to actually receive money back from that lawsuit. So by taking that approach, they were actually able to get this money in the hands of cities, counties, and the state, where they could actually get out and do some good with it here in the community. This is a fully funded grant for 2 years for these positions. I think it's a really unique opportunity that we've got here, and Chief or Sheriff, I'll open it up to y'all to talk about this and what this does for your team.
Thank you, Justice. So we learned about this grant through Kurt Lane, the director of the AORP. And but what really stuck out to me is the sheriff and I attended the concerned citizens lunching, and the sheriff spoke on immigration, fentanyl, some of Governor Sanders' new bills and stuff like that. I noticed halfway through the crowd, as the sheriff spoke on the harsher penalties of drug dealers, stuff like that, I noticed a lady about midways that she was getting upset and getting emotional. Well, she stood up and she posed the question. She said, what good is Governor Sanders' harsher penalties if no one's doing the investigations. And she went on to say that her, I believe it was her son, had died of an overdose, and whichever law enforcement agency it was, she handed them their phone that had all the information, the name of the supplier, and to her knowledge, nothing had ever been done. So that really made me sit back and think, we've got, you know, as law enforcement as a whole, we got to do better. Okay? So I got to looking at this funding opportunity and speaking with Kurt Lane and Tom Fisher, and I applied for it, and as you spoke, it's the settlement funds. We needed buy-in from mayors and the county judge. Obviously, without blinking an eye, Judge Dawson signed his signature of approval. I spoke with all the police chiefs. I actually sent some emails to the mayor. Mayor Scroggins out of Bologna put his signature of approval on there. And what that does is this team will assist his agency in fatal overdoses and non-fatal overdoses. However, that does not mean we will not assist anybody else. Once this is up and running, if it's approved, we will put this out for any agency that may need help in this area. So what this done is, there were several, with this funding, you could do several things. Narcan, which we did participate, we got 170 kits of Narcan a couple weeks ago. There were several avenues that you could use this funding for. Well, if you'll allow me the time, thank you to Coroner Thorne. She provided me some statistics. For year 2022, there were 17 overdose-related deaths in Faulkner County. Three were solely from fentanyl, three from fentanyl methamphetamine, two from fentanyl and other substances, three from methamphetamine, and then the rest of them were various other substances. When I put this grant together in July for this year, seven overdose-related deaths have been reported in Faulkner County. Two were solely from fentanyl, three were from fentanyl and other substances, one was methamphetamine, and at the time, one was pending. Our deputies respond multiple times to non-fatality overdoses. And sadly, there's been an uptick in juvenile overdoses involving fentanyl here in this county. So we're hoping to use this team to combat, and it will assign one criminal investigator that is his sole duty is to respond to fatal and non-fatal. And basically, he will work that investigation backwards. So, to find out who the supplier is, so we can prosecute him. Paired with that, through the grant, is a peer specialist. And what they'll do is they will provide counseling to the families of the fatal overdoses and the non-fatal overdoses, and assist them with, you know, whatever counseling services are available. I'd also like to utilize that person, depending on call load, in our detention facility to also assist with those incarcerated with drug addiction. And then there'll be various other, you know, school engagements about substance abuse, local, you know, anytime we can get out and spread the word on the epidemic. Also with the grant, we did for the two positions, but we were also able to get funding for, it's called GreatKey, and it's a forensic tool for cell phones. Cell phones are getting harder and harder. We've got some old systems that were good in the day, but as technology gets bigger, it gets harder to get into. Well, for this two-year, it's about $30,000 worth of forensic equipment to be able to pull forensics off cell phones for these investigations.
Thank you, Chief.
Yes, sir.
Does the committee have any questions for the Sheriff's Office?
I just want to make clear, this investigator is going to be investigating with the intention of pursuing criminal charges against people who deal to these overdose victims. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
I'm all for this, Chief. Just this morning, a kid got on my bus, and He worked for the Saltillo Volunteer Fire Department. He said they got a call this morning for a potential overdose this morning in our school district. So I think we live in a time when a lot of people in positions of power and government at all levels are looking to make drugs easier to get, make drugs less criminal, to avoid consequences. We're seeing people that aren't prosecuted in other places in the country. I would like to send a message to Faulkner County that we won't tolerate and we will pursue them and we will put them away. Hard. So I appreciate what you're doing. I'll be all for this.
Thank you, Justice Allison. Any other committee members?
Can I answer?
Go ahead.
Justice Tyler's question.
Yes, sir.
So with that beer, as obviously you're familiar, there's credential levels in the state of Arkansas. So they will be under management of the sheriff's office based on their credential level. And there are tons of reporting that I'll have to do monthly and quarterly to give to the state on how we're operating. So they'll be under the management of the sheriff's office.
Okay. Do any of our justices have any questions or comments? Anybody else in the room? Any of the public? Okay. Thank you, Chief.
Thanks, sir.
Committee, like I said, I think this is a unique opportunity. This position is fully funded for 2 years. I think it could do a lot of good in our community. You know, after those 2 years, like Chief and I talked about in the Sheriff's Department, you know, we'll have to find that within the budget to keep it going if looking at the data and everything, it's successful and going on with it. But right now, I'm all for it. So on that, I'll take a motion to forward this ordinance 2326 to Budget and Finance.
So moved.
Okay. Second. All those in favor say aye.
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 Okay. Unanimous. Okay, now we're moving into the resolutions. And like Justice Lahosky said, these are resolutions that are going to be forwarded on to the budget committee if they are forwarded out of here. And these are for consideration for salary requests that have been submitted. We've also got supporting data with salary surveys, and I appreciate all of our elected officials and managers. A lot of work goes into this. As you can see, there's a large stack of that, and we'll start working our way through these. So I will take a motion to put Resolution 2301 on the table.
Make a motion.
Second.
We've got a motion and a second. Counselor, if you'll read this one by title only, please.
Committee Resolution 23-01, sponsored by the Personnel Committee, being enacted by the Cornport County of Faulkner, State of Arkansas. It says ordinance, but that is probably a mistake there. But ordinance being titled, an appropriation ordinance to allow increases in salaries for 15 full-time positions in county library to become effective January 1, 2024.
Thank you, Counselor. I'll take a motion to amend where it says ordinance right there to resolution real quick.
So moved.
Got second. A second. Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. It passes. Okay. Mr. McGraw.
I've done a couple odd things with this one. I've been talking to some of my peers. We had a little bit of change up with the Classic Counties. Jefferson County, which has pretty good salaries, dropped off. Lonoke County, which is a pretty small rural county system, came on as a Classic County. So I've been reaching out to my peers and finding out what their staffing levels are. The amount that we pay our staff is lagging behind what my peers are doing. And also just the level of staffing we have, the amount of actual payroll per capita is lower than all the other Classic Counties. One step we can do is to make our frontline staff particularly more competitive. We just lost a member of the Mayflower staff to Saline County Library System just this week. They pay a lot better than we are for comparable positions. So one thing I've done is I did put the standard salary survey the way we've always done things, but Sebastian County is not a Classic County system. Sebastian County is everything in Sebastian County except for Fort Smith. The Fort Smith Public Library System is a 90,000 person's system, or 90,000, they serve a patron base of 90,000, which is greater than Lone Oak County and bigger than White County does. So I've tried substituting Sebastian County, which is really just four rural libraries. Sebastian County has five full-time staff and five part-time staff. That's a tiny fraction of even what Lone Oak and White County are doing compared, much less us. We are essentially the largest of the class six counties in population and the lowest on payroll per capita. So what I try to do is give a tier of the larger class six counties. So it's the enforcement public, Garland County, Saloon County, and Craighead County.
Thank you, Mr. McGraw. This one, we do have this one right here, but it was sent out in an Excel spreadsheet. And as you can see, you can go through that, the traditional salary survey, which just an FYI for some of our new justices, we have it structured in such a way where we want to see all the class six data. So that's from the smallest to the largest. And then my request is usually after that point, if there's comparable class sixes or something outside of that range that you want to compare to, which Mr. McGraw talked about in Fort Smith, comparing to that, he can put that data together as well. And so that's what we're kind of looking at here with this. And Mr. McGraw has based these numbers on adding Fort Smith in there and Garland. So that kind of moves the averages around. And really what we're looking for from this committee is, do they agree with that approach? Or do they want to stick with the class six classification and compare those and contrast them and move from there? Does the committee have any questions for Mr. McGraw?
Just so I'm clear, what's in the resolution is the tiered average, is that
yes,
correct?
The tiered average.
Does this move us close to the front of the line for class six counties?
It moves us to the middle of the top four.
Gotcha. And we're the largest, or you said?
We're serving the largest patron base
per
of those class six counties.
Gotcha.
And we're paying the least per capita in our payroll.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Justice Pearson. Any other members?
So is this tier average you have here what you're proposing the 2024 salaries to be?
Right. That would be an average of what Craighead, Garland, Fort Smith, and Saline County are doing. Faulkner County is not calculated in the average.
Mr. Chairman, I'll make it.
Hang on one second.
Sure.
I'm done. Yes, sir.
Good. Okay. Go ahead, Justice Fisher.
I'm pretty sure I'm aware. This is a dedicated funding stream solely for the library.
Absolutely.
And if these raises were to pass, are you still on a solid financial footing?
Extremely solid.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Justice. Any other committee members have any questions? Any justices in the audience have any questions? Mr. McGraw, can you give them a quick overview of how you're funded just for some of our new justices? Just quick high level.
In 1949, a single mill was passed to support libraries. That is still the case in Faulkner County. A lot of the other library systems we're comparing ourselves to have slightly higher millage rates, Garland County, Saline County. But we're still getting by on one mill. One mill's doing us great, and we are supporting five libraries in Faulkner County, and the part-time salary thing that was up for the budget committee earlier tonight is about staffing a new library in Guy in a very exciting new building there, too. So we may be looking at six libraries in 2024.
Thank you. Does anybody in the public have any comments or questions? Okay. Thank you, Mr. McGraw.
Appreciate it.
Okay, committee, I'll take a motion to forward this for consideration to Budget and Finance.
So moved.
Do I have a second? Resolution fails for lack of a second. Okay. We'll move to the next one. Proposed Committee Resolution 2302. Counselor, could you please read that? By title only, please.
Proposed Committee Resolution 23-02 be enacted by the Personnel Committee of the County of Faulkner, State of Arkansas, a resolution to be entitled a resolution to increase salaries for 11 full-time positions in the Assessor's Office to be addressed in the 2024 annual budget process to become effective January 1st, 2024.
Thank you, Counselor. Go ahead.
Okay.
Assessor Willis.
So, provided all of these, and Chris said that all this got sent out also. What I did is the same. I did everything with Faulkner, everything without Faulkner, and then chose Sebastian and Celine that is the most comparable. I tried to keep us closely in line with all of those as well as the other offices within Faulkner. This puts us pretty much in line with, I think this pretty much brings everybody that I thought that was, that needed to be brought up, up to where we are, where we would be good after this, that I think we would be in line, and that there wouldn't be anybody else that would need to be adjusted.
Okay. Does the committee have any questions on any of these sections?
We're also funded different.
Can you give us a quick overview of that just for our new justices?
So a few years ago, Scott Sampson was able to pull us out. We've always been funded different, but Scott was able to take us from County General to 1805 fund. So now us, the treasurer, the collector, are in 1805, so that now we don't even appear to be in County General's 1,000. So that only about 9% of our funding comes from County General. So if we're asking for 30,000, roughly 3,000 comes from County General.
Thank you.
We are funded primarily by taxes and by school.
Do the committee members have any questions for our assessor? Do any of the JPs in the audience have any questions? Okay. Does the public? Okay. Well, I will take a motion to forward resolution 2302 to budget and finance. Do I have a second? Motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Okay. It passes to budget and finance. Okay. We've got proposed committee resolution 2303. Can I have a motion to put this on the table for discussion?
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay. Counselor, can you read this one by title only, please, sir?
Proposed committee resolution 23-03 be enacted by the Personnel Committee, County of Faulkner, State of Arkansas, a resolution to be entitled a resolution to allow increases in salaries for one full-time position in the county recorder cost to be addressed in the 2024 annual budget process to become effective January 1st, 2024.
Thank you, Counselor. Go ahead.
Okay. So this raise request is for my real estate manager. She's actually classified as a class 3 deputy clerk right now, but I want to change her to manager because she is actually, when I'm gone, Rebecca, my chief deputy's gone, she is in charge. And so I have done a salary with all the class 6 without Faulkner County. And then I did one with Faulkner County and also one with the county clerk, with one of her supervisors. And then I did the top 3, which was Sebastian, Craighead, and Celine. And that was actually averaged out to a little bit more than what I'm asking for her. She has been with me 13 years, and she does a fabulous job, and I do not want to ever lose her.
Okay.
So, and I've given kind of a brief overview on the back of what she does.
Thank you for that, Ms. Easton. Does the committee have any questions for Circuit Clerk?
And our funding is cost recorder only. It's no county general money.
Very good. Any questions from the committee? Any questions from JPs in the audience? Anybody else in the audience? Okay. I will take a motion to forward resolution 2303 to Budget and Finance.
So moved.
Second.
Thank you.
Okay, all those in favor, say aye.
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 Thank you.
Ayes have it. Okay, this is forwarded to Budget and Finance. On to proposed committee resolution 2304. I'll take a motion to put this on the table for discussion.
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, Counselor, if you'll read this by title only, please.
Proposed committee resolution 23-04 be enacted by the Personnel Committee of the County of Faulkner, State of Arkansas, a resolution to be entitled a resolution to allow an increase in salary for the Faulkner County Legal Assistant to be addressed in the 2024 annual budget process to be effective January 1st, 2024.
Thank you. Administrator Higgins, go ahead, sir.
Good evening, Justices. You should have the salary survey information here. This is a little bit of a unique position, the legal assistant that actually serves with within the judge's office. Last year, when we were doing salary increase and everything, this particular one we didn't really focus on and kind of missed through the process. And so as we went through and looked at our salaries, this was the only one in the judge's office that we felt like needed an adjustment. You can go through and see the salary and the averages and those kinds of things, but I want to talk a little bit about what she does. And one of the things she deals with is the debt set off or set aside. Last year was involved in bringing $800,000 back into the county by managing that particular project. She's one who deals with all of our FOIA requests. I did not realize as a JP how many FOIA requests comes into county office, but there are a lot of them, and so she handles those facilities, make sure they get the right people. Bid management. So we do a lot of bid work. As you know, anything over $20,000 that's not on state contract, we have bids. So she does the bid management for that. I work hand in hand with our ARP administrator, Tom Anderson, and dealing with ARP. All of that sewer work and water pipe work that we approved last year, she's engaged with dealing with that. And also legal research. We get a lot of calls that come into the office that just deal with just ordinances and resolutions. The other day I had a resolution and an ordinance that I was looking for information for. I hunted for 2 or 3 hours. Had to do with buildings, same thing that date back to the 1970s. In a few moments she had that information for me. So it's just kind of a thumbnail sketch of the things that she does. Also, when we look at this salary, what it will do will bring her up in parity with just our administrative assistant that's in the office that works side by side with her. So that's kind of a thumbnail sketch of this request.
Thank you, Administrator Higgins. Does the committee have any questions? Do any of our JPs in the audience? Anybody else?
I will piggyback off that she's sharp and she helps me a lot. Anytime I need something, she can get it real quick.
Thank you.
I'm just gonna say, ma'am.
And to echo sentiments, not only is she a great employee, but this is also out of the county general apportion fund. This is not the county general fund, so that fund does not come out of county general. It is a special fund that's composed of several of our elected officials and several specific funds, so this does not actually come out of county general.
Thank you for that, Mr. Murphy. Okay. I will take a motion to forward resolution 2304 to Budget and Finance.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
The ayes have it.
Thank you, Jess.
Forwarded. Thank you. Okay. Next up, we've got resolution 2305. I'll take a motion to put that on the table for discussion.
Make a motion.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay. Can you read that by title only, Counselor, please?
Proposed resolution, resolution of Personnel Committee 23-05, being enacted by the Personnel Committee of the County of Faulkner, State of Arkansas, resolution to be entitled a resolution to allow increases in salaries for 113 full-time positions in the Faulkner County Sheriff's Office to be addressed at the 2024 annual budget process to be effective January 1st, 2024.
Thank you, Counselor. Okay, so this one's a little bit unique compared to the most of them that we've seen tonight. This is a lot of positions within the sheriff's department. I know I have some questions for Ms. Woolley, and I know one thing, kind of what I mentioned earlier, that we've got a couple ways of keeping our employees in line, and that's through either raise requests, or hopefully if everybody is caught up and in line, then we can do that through COLAs, and everybody just raises at the same time. And I know I'd ask Ms. Woolley, you know, if the quorum court, if the budget allows, if we are able to give a COLA, would that alleviate a lot of these requests where we wouldn't have to necessarily hear all these and they'd just be taken care of in that process? Go ahead, Ms. Lillian.
Okay, so if you'd like, I can answer that question first. It depends at what rate you set the COLA, and also it depends on if you just only did the COLA or if you did what the court has done in the past, which is approve the increase and then add the COLA to it. So there's a lot of variables, and I looked at it tremendously because I've heard possible percentages of COLA tossed around anywhere from 4 to 6%, but it's a hard question to answer because it will take care of some, but it will give money to some that doesn't show that need an increase. So yes, it overall would do our department better, which I believe I've actually said that same exact thing in years past when that question arose, that overall that would be better for our department to go with a COLA. But the quorum court and the committee wants us to present this every September, and I'm not sure how every other department does it, but we analyze every one of our positions and we present the complete salary survey for every position, whether it shows an increase if needed or not. And so in our packet, I'm hoping that it was emailed out, that that it shows all of the data is there to support what we're asking for with our increases. But we're not saying that we don't want a COLA. So, just to clarify that.
Noted.
So in our Personnel Committee resolution, what is sectioned off, the first section are 64 full-time positions in the Sheriff's Department, which is in County General. And it doesn't show a grand total for that on the resolution, but I can tell you what that grand total is. So if the increases were passed for all of those positions, the salary increase would be $111,881.36. With benefits, it would be a grand total of $141,538.45. And that's in Fund 1000, Department 0400. And then in the second section is for our County Jail Department under County General. The increase for those 13 positions would, for salaries, would be an increase of $20,196.84. And with benefits, the grand total is $25,550.54. And then, and so those two departments together in County General, so our increases would cost County General a grand total of $167,088.99. The next section is out of the Criminal Justice Fund. We have three different payroll departments in there. The first one is the County Jail Department. There's 16 positions in that department. The grand total increase for salaries would be $22,881.20. With benefits, it's $28,946.46. Then in our Deputies and Dispatchers Fund, 0436 in Criminal Justice, Department in Criminal Justice Fund, the salary increase would be $12,469.60. With benefits, it's $15,774.99. And then the final department in Criminal Justice is our COPS grant. Those six positions, salary increase would, grand total would be $5,805.60. With benefits, it's $7,344.53. Those three departments totaled together are $52,065.98. And then we do have two positions that are funded out of the PSAP fund that we always ask to increase them the same. It's our two dispatchers that are paid out of there. And so the increase, if those two were included, would for salaries would be $729.60. With benefits, it would be $923. And so all together, all three funds added together would be a grand total of $220,077.98. And if y'all have questions about individual positions, I have our salary surveys that I can turn to and discuss. But we have 43 different job titles within the sheriff's office. And I looked at this real quickly just a second ago. So out of those 43 different job titles, 18, we are asking for the exact average increase. Five of them have no increase. Five are below the average, and the only reason we are not going to the actual average for our request is to not throw off our own pay scale within our department. And then 15 will actually raise them above the average.
So. Very good. Thank you, Ms. Woolley.
You're welcome.
It's a lot of information. I know there's a lot of information in the salary survey, so thank you once again to yourself and everybody else that put the time and effort in this, because this is hard. Used to, before we started doing this, it was hard to get up here. You get these explanations, but you don't necessarily have any data to see that to back it up. So this helps the justices make informed decisions and have data to back that up to see that. The only reason I mentioned the COLA stuff is just for my own knowledge, and as well, if this is forwarded on to budget and finance, for them to have that in consideration, whether these requests are approved or if the COLA takes care of it, that could be a variable factor that they're looking at.
I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Go ahead.
I can give you a little bit of additional information, because like I said before, I analyzed it every which way I could think of that y'all could possibly propose it through committees or full court when it came to our increased request versus COLA or adding it together. And so what I said just a second ago, if you add all three funding sources together, our increased request is $167,088.99 for just a 4% COLA for those positions. No increase, just 4% COLA is $225,292.62. 5% COLA for all of those positions is $281,615.77. A 6% COLA is $337,938.93. And then there's two other options. If you take our increase request, add 4% to it, a 4% COLA added after the fact, it would be $399,065.17. And then the other option is our increases plus 5% COLA is $457,059.22. That's the difference.
Thank you, ma'am.
You're welcome.
Does the committee have any questions for Ms. Woolley?
I don't have any questions, but this is a textbook example of Angie Woolley and her proficientness. If that's a word, I guess it is not. I just made it up. Sheriff Riles and the sheriffs before him have always struggled with this right here, because I have put these together myself, and they are exhausting to do. And I applaud your effort to do this. The problem is the sheriff's office has the vast majority of the budget for the county because they have the most employees. The smaller departments, and they are obviously very deserving, but in years past, the sheriff's office has taken a backseat to this type of stuff because it did cost so much. And I will be in support of this resolution.
Thank you, Justice Sean. Any of our other justices have questions?
I just have one comment. I believe in years past, when we've done raise resolutions like this and then a COLA goes into effect, I believe last year we took whichever was the greater of the two. Some advocated for the COLA on top of the raise request, but I think what we actually did was whichever was the greater of the two. That may change this year. We may do a COLA on it. Just putting that out there, because I think you said that it was added on top, but I don't think that was the case. But Thank you for putting these together. I'm in support of the resolution.
No, thank you for the clarification. I could have said that and been wrong. So thank you, Justice Pearson. Any other committee members?
These bring up to this year's average for the class six counties, or how you said it compare, right? Not where other counties will may possibly add COLAs to their sheriff's department too. So if we did this and then we did a county like COLA, it may just keep us in line for another year, possibly.
So possibly, yes, sir. What we use to get all of our salary information is the 2023 AOC salary service data. So, yes, it's based on this year. And I know other counties, they reach out to me quite often to find out what our salaries are, and I'll send them a spreadsheet because they are doing very similar actions as what y'all are doing right now. So.
I want to thank you for your hard work, too.
Thank you, sir.
Just shocked said.
Thank you, Justice Allison. Go ahead.
I was curious. I know in the past you've lost a lot of deputies to higher paying departments. So I assume that's still ongoing. How many deputies, if it's ongoing, have you lost this year?
I don't have that information on hand. We have not had, I can't say exact numbers, but we have not had the kind of turnover that we used to have with our patrol this year. What we're struggling in is our detention center. That's where we're having a hard time because, honestly, it's just one of the hardest jobs I think anybody could ever try to take on. But I don't think you could pay them enough. But, we are asking for what the data shows. And so our patrol right now is fully staffed. So we have no vacancies. And it has consistently stayed pretty much that way, at least the second part of this year for sure.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Ms. Woolley.
You're welcome.
Any of our JPs in the audience have a question? Go ahead, Justice Coates.
Actually, I have two.
Go for
it. What is my own ignorance with the COLA situation? So when we do pass a COLA, if we do, is that countywide or can it vary by department?
Traditionally, it's been countywide.
Detention officers, the salary survey did not show that they needed any increase. And I can actually show you, let me go to their actual salary survey and I'll explain.
But that's where our biggest turnover is.
Yes, right. Ma'am. But like I said, this is based on the data. And so we requested what the data shows. And I'm not speaking from personal experience, but I don't necessarily think that our detention officers are quitting because of their pay. I think it's not the line of work that everybody believes that they can do once they sign up for it. And so that's a large part of our turnover. They may work there a couple weeks, a couple months, and they realize it's not enough. I mean, it's not for them. But the salary survey data showed that a detention officer's average salary for the class six counties is $37,709. And right now, we are paying our detention officers $37,960. So we are above the average at this point. So we did not ask for that. And that is also one of our, that is the one position in our department, if I remember right, that we have the most positions in. We have 48 detention officers and then 8 juvenile detention officers. So those positions are not included in the increase request. But they would, I mean, if a COLA is passed, we would ask for that. And yes, Justice Pearson, you're correct. I do recall that now. And I believe the year before it was added to all, and then this last year, it was dependent on which one was above. So we're open to any options. I just could only analyze what I've been in class. You're welcome.
Thank you, Justice Coates. Yeah, I know in the past we've had discussions that it's just it's a very challenging environment for those positions. And I know, I believe the sheriff or chief or one of my, that problem is not unique to us. I think that's just an industry-wide, it's an issue keeping personnel in those positions. So thank you. Any other questions from JPs in the audience? Hang on.
Just a note that to the newer members of the court, a couple of years ago, we made great strides in bringing those deputy or those detention officers up in a pay scale.
Oh, yes.
And that's how they ended up where they are now. They were making, I believe, and I'm not mistaken, correct me, Ms. Lloyd, $13 an hour, I think, a couple years ago.
I believe it was $13.01, and we were adamant when we requested their large increase. I mean, they received a very large increase, that we wanted them at least $15 an hour, because that's what people at fast food restaurants were making starting out. So we did get them increased to that when that request was presented, and then they've received COLAs since then to raise them to where they're at now.
So I'd like to see them definitely stay above the average for the job that they do, but I just want to let them know that they're a member of the court and what, how that happened. So.
And I want not just the committee and the court members and everybody, but I want even our employees to hear this. It's not that we don't want to come to the table and ask for every single one of our positions. We do. But when we have 172, I believe, full-time positions within our office, and our payroll exceeds, I believe, over $9 million, it is very hard to present a request to you all to just ask for something that the data doesn't show. So it's not that we don't want to, but when we could leave that off, I mean, our request is already almost $170,000, and that's just based on, you know, the data. So it's not that we don't want to, it's just we have to pick and choose and attack the things that we can.
Thank you. Just a strength.
Well, that was part of my question that he asked, but these detention officers, just quick math in my head, that's less than 20 an hour. That's about, what, $18 an hour or something like that?
Give me a second. I'll tell you exactly what it is. just 1 second. Because they are actually, they're a law enforcement employee, and their work, their shift work is different than an 80-hour employee. So they make $17.07 an hour right now.
I don't think I'd do it for that.
Okay. Anybody in the audience have any questions? Okay. We'll take a motion to forward Resolution 2305 to Budget and Finance.
I'm so moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
The ayes have it. It's forwarded. Thank you. And last but not least, Resolution 2306. I'll take a motion to put it on the floor for discussion.
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second. Counselor, can you read it by title only, please?
Resolution of Personnel Committee 23-06 to be enacted by the Personnel Committee of the County of Faulkner, State of Arkansas. A resolution to be entitled a resolution to allow increases in salary for one full-time position in the coroner's office to be addressed in the 2024 annual budget process to be effective January 1st, 2024.
Thank you, Counselor. Administrator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, if you'll allow me to advocate for the coroner's office.
Advocate away, sir.
So if you'll allow me, I'll give just a little bit of background on behalf of the first-term JPs that may not be, you know, familiar with the coroner's office. But we have a unique situation with our coroner's office. And of the 75 counties, 73 of them, the coroners are elected. And so we have two counties. Pulaski County and Faulkner County, where they're actually appointed, recommended by the county judge, and then approved by the coroner court. We're fortunate in Faulkner County that we have an awesome coroner, does a great job, and as a result of that, though, she has a staff of deputy coroners. And so Jessica brought it to the judge's office attention, and we were working with her about the fact that she does not have a deputy coroner. And so we looked at it, you know, last week, some of you may or may not know, but Judge Dodson was out with COVID, not to air all his sicknesses and everything, but he was out last week, and his deputy, which happened to be me, filled in for the week while he was out. I know when Sheriff Riles is out of town, he has a chief deputy that helps take care of business so that when he's out of town at conventions and those kinds of things, the treasurer has a chief deputy. The county clerk has a chief deputy. So you can see the trend here that they have people that help assist them when they're out and about. The coroner does not. And she is on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, responding to all kinds of things. But as we looked at this, really the way that the positioning works, a chief deputy for the coroner doesn't exactly fit. And the reason for that is it's just she's a department head, since she's not an elected official, a department head. And typically what we try to do in Faulkner County is kind of keep our chief deputies aligned compensation-wise And that just wouldn't work for a chief deputy of the coroner's office, because they would try to align them with the next tier level. But that doesn't mean that she doesn't need help. So what we came up with is, instead of a chief deputy position, it might be confusing when we're dealing with the overall compensation, is an assistant coroner in a title. And so she has designated one of her deputy coroners that she would like to move in this position of an assistant coroner. And with that, I have a responsibility, kind of a commensurate pay increase, to compensate him for the additional duties that they would do. So that is a thumbnail sketch of that. Now, if you'll look at the salary survey, I think we've included class six counties. And so that's to kind of compare roughly. And honestly, it's not really apples and apples because of the differences in elected and not elected, and the counties do things differently, but it's pretty close. We did also include the class seven county, which is Pulaski County, which is the other appointed coroner. Of course, you know, Pulaski County is significantly larger, has a much higher revenue than Faulkner County does, but we want to make sure that you guys had all of the data available for you to look at.
Thank you, sir. Yep. And like Administrator Higgins says, that there are the two separate salary survey. The one with Celine Sebastian is a class six. The other one has a few different counties in there, Pulaski, Benton, Washington. Made sure those were both available to the committee. Does the committee have any questions? Okay, while they're thinking about it, JP's in the audience. Anybody in the public? Going once, going twice. I'll take a motion to forward this to Budget and Finance Committee for resolution or 2306.
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion and a second. All those in favor, say aye. Ayes have it. It is forwarded on.
Thank you, JP.
Thank you, sir. I think we've made it. That concludes everything that I have on the agenda. Not aware of anything else. Like I said, we will have a meeting next month to catch a couple that weren't able to be here tonight. Anybody on the committee have anything? Okay. Make a motion to adjourn. Okay. We're adjourned. Thank you.
Agendas with some of the paperwork if y'all are interested in it. Did I get one? Mm-hmm. Okay. Is everybody back? Thank you, Counselor. I want to call the Courts and Public Safety Committee meeting to order. We're going to change things up a little bit tonight on our agenda, if that is okay with everybody. We're going to move the Volunteer Fire Department request up to the top of the list for the new business. But before we do that, do we have any special reports? Any old business? All right, our new business. We will start with the election for Pine Village Volunteer Fire Department dues. If Councilor Murphy will discuss that for us.
Yeah, so what we have is both a proposed ordinance and a proposed resolution. These are kind of a joint packet deal. We've done this previously last year for three different fire departments. I think in 2023, this court passed ordinances and resolutions for the Cato Fire Department to have a election to increase fire dues, the Liberty Fire Department to increase fire dues, and Highway 286 Fire Department to increase fire dues. This is a very similar, in fact, it's just about the exact copy of the ordinance resolution that was passed last year on those three fire departments. Just so you know, fire departments are kind of a quasi-entity of the county. They are their own separate legal entity. However, they are allowed to use the county services to collect their fire dues. And in this case, for a long time, and Mr. Brewer probably can speak to the amount of years, but I think it's been about 20 or 30 years since the Pine Village Fire Department has increased their dues. Unlike a millage, that we have on property tax, which is based on the percent of your value of your home, most volunteer fire departments have a set rate. So as inflation occurs and as price increases happen, essentially they are losing money every year by not having an increase, if you will. So what this does, the resolution is a message to the election commission in which it basically asks, or the Quorum Court asks the election commission to place this on the ballot for the March 2024 election. And then the ordinance is a separate matter, but that ordinance is basically asking the assessor and the collector here in the county to, if this passes, that they would be responsible for collecting those dues. And the fire department can speak to the actual dues, but I think the increase is rather minimal. I think on residents, it's gone from $40 to $60. There's about four tiers here that you can see as far as whether the commercial building has more than 5,000 square feet or less than 5,000 square feet, unimproved lots. And then I think that there's also an apartment section as well. But those are issues that you can, the fire department can answer, and I'll be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you. Do we have any questions from any of the justices? Anybody in the audience? Any other justices in the audience? And Counselor, just to be clear, we are voting to put this on the ballot. We are not voting as a commit or to move it to the full court, but we are voting to put this on the ballot and not to raise the tax.
That's
or
correct.
Raise the fee.
You are essentially allowing the people of Pine Village Fire District to decide whether or not they want to increase their fire dues.
Just wanted to be clear. Thank you so much. Justice Strain?
Well, I guess you guys know that some of these fire departments, it's amazing that they do what they do on the shoestring budget that they have. I think we passed all of the requests of them that came up last year just to put them on the ballot. The cost of equipment, as you might imagine, I mean, if you bought a new car, even looked at one recently, it's shocking, you know, and they're facing the same kind of issues, not just with their equipment for the fire trucks or the water trucks or whatever they have to have, but the turnout equipment, the breathing air apparatuses, the radios, all those things have just gone up exponentially, and it's just amazing that they can even function. So I would appreciate it if you guys would pass this. I don't know if they give anything to add. Okay, I'll ask Larry to come up and address any questions that you have. Thanks.
Thank you.
I'd like to quickly say I don't remember Larry not being involved in their fire department, so I appreciate all your decades of service. We appreciate you.
If I lived October 14th, I had 52 years.
I knew it was a minute.
I retired from Pine Village for 30 years. Also, was with Pine Village 20 years. I was chief 15. I was the one that got the first on the ballot to be voted for the $40 a resident. And that's why I'm happy today to get to raise it. Equipment is going up, fuel is going up. We've got a building that the termites is running to eat it up, but the roof is leaking real bad that we need to change. This money will help us a great way. We are class four now. We're saving our people several hundreds of dollars on their insurances. The only way we would go any lower in rating with ISO is we need water. We have no water. We're doing it all on tanker aid. But that's why we're needing the money. And when we started this, it carried us 20 years. So now it's time to increase it. We're not trying to take the people to the cleaners. We're just trying to get an even amount that we can keep operating on. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Any additional questions or comments? I'll entertain a motion to send this to the full court.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 The ordinance and the resolution both pass. onto the full court.
And just as a clarification, this does not have an emergency clause to it, so it'd be read three times. That's a little bit different than what some of our ordinances have, and the court can decide whether or not they want to pass it. But as it's written, that would mean the third reading would be in November, which would be plenty of time before the election.
Just an administrative question, maybe. When we do the three readings, will that go before committee as well as court, or just court?
It'll be in full court.
Okay, thank you. Our next item of business is the animal shelter discussion. I'm also going to ask that we be a little bit more casual in our discussion over this. We do have some boards and floor plans, but I'm going to ask Administrator Higgins to come forward. We did accept and open the bids today, and so I'm going to let him explain kind of where we're at.
So for the,
you want the Tanville?
Yeah. You'll see this side?
Thank you, Counselor. As we pass the floor plans and then the conceptual drawing of the front for the committee to take a look at, we just give a little bit of a background. The county judge's office worked with our architects and Justice Coates and several of us to kind of fine-tune the floor plan down. So, you know, kind of back history when I was still on the Corwin Court, we did a needs analysis. They reviewed it. It came in way out of the money, the estimated price. We sent it back several times to work it down to where we could actually afford to, you know, something that we could build and potentially operate. So this is the floor plan that we came up with. It went out for bid. It's been out for bid for the past, I think, 2 or 3 weeks that it has been out for bid. We did our bid opening today. I think, Justice Coates, do you have the numbers? I didn't have them in front of me.
Yes, sir.
We had two qualified bids that actually came in.
We had one bid from Hay Construction that came in at $1,217,121. That's without the alternate bids and the deductives. Mm-hmm. And then our other bid that came in from NBMC came in at $1,166,000.
So one thing to take into consider also is that you really need to consider adding a 20% soft cost to that. Soft costs are going to be the things like tables and chairs, probably the kennels were not included, although all the plumbing and the fixtures for the kennels were included. The kennels themselves were not. One reason is there's some options that we can utilize for that. So if you look at the price, add 20% to that. Think about it, at $1.1 million. It's going to be about $220,000, roughly. I just did that in my head. That would be added to that. So that's the bid price that has come in. I'll entertain any questions at this point.
So you think for that bid price plus 20%, we could have this in an operating state?
That's what we're looking at right now, Justice Allison. Yes, sir. I'll just make a couple of notes on this for you guys. As you look, you know, for those of you that have been to the building, this area here is not built out, so that we're not addressing that part of it. Also, we're actually utilizing about two-thirds of the building, so this is for growth opportunity. I probably could use this for storage as well for some of the animal advocates who, that's a big deal about where you store various things, that could be utilized for that, but that's not part of the build out there. For those out in the audience, same way the grayed area to the right.
And just to be clear, Administrator Higgins, those bid amounts did include, with the 20% soft cost, that is the complete build out with all of that, but we do hope that different animal activist groups, whatever, you know,
so we can talk about that philosophically, and I've been engaged in this myself for, 13 or 14 years. And, one of the things that I noticed during the Bologna tornado was really one of the first ones is there's a lot of passionate people in Faulkner County to deal with animals. And we learned it then that they're really passionate wanting to come out. As a JP, I hear it over and over that if the county would do something, they would be willing to support. Now is really the time for the animal interest community to step up to help with this. So there are ideas. I know Ms. Clausen and I had talked in times past about there's opportunities where people are ready to give to something, but right now there's not been anything. So now this is something. So, but it will be time for them to step up. There will be some programs where people can contribute to various rooms. They can contribute to a cat room or a dog room or a vet room. There'll be programs that will be available for them as part of the build out program. All of that helps save on cost. The cost aspect will help with the operational part. Now, I freely admit that we have about $1.5 million. I didn't see the report tonight, see what the most current number is. Justice Coates, do you have that number?
$1.347 million in the animal.
That hadn't been appropriated?
In the animal life.
Yeah.
$1.347 million.
Okay. So we have $1.347 million that part of the plan that Justice Dodson will be talking about is to actually do a potentially build out this facility with ARP funds, and the $1.3 million and some change, utilize that for startup operating costs. That should allow 2 to 3 years of operating costs to allow the shelter to be up and running. And part of the expectation is through donations and increase in animal volunteer tax and everything to help pay for the operations completely. So again, Judge Dodds can talk about that a little more in his ARP discussion.
Since I've been on court, this has been an issue long before I got on court. And I know, talking to my predecessor, he indicated before then and since the discussions we've had on here, seems like the biggest obstacle to moving forward the animal shelter all these years has been the operating costs and not wanting to take that out of county general, not wanting to take that out of county budget, not wanting to put that burden on the taxpayers. We have heard, since I've been on court numerous times, and I would imagine y'all had too, that once we get a building, once we get a place, then the animal community would step up and fund this through the voluntary tax. I've said before that I'll not vote to fund the operations outside of that. So in the event that this did move forward, I voted to purchase the building with the animal shelter funds, and I would vote to fund the build out. But I'm still stuck on we have to get the funding to come from somewhere besides the taxpayers, except for the voluntary tax. The voluntary tax, I'll pay the voluntary tax. I hope a lot of people will. I hope they do step up. But we need the operating costs to come from this. I'll just say that, in my opinion, we need the operating costs to come from the voluntary tax sooner rather than later. I think getting this out soon would probably be a big way to help. We may be able to gauge the increase in the property tax, the voluntary tax that we collect this year, if we can get this information out and people can see this, so that we can have some data to give us an estimate on how much money we're going to generate. We get the money in the animal shelter fund to build it out if we need to. So I would really like to see the community step up and pay for the operating costs.
If I may make a comment to that. One of the things I served on the advisory committee under Judge Baker with the animal shelter, and one of the things that came to my mind was that it was not just the animal advocates that were pushing for the shelter. And even since, it hasn't been necessarily the animal advocates that call me, or probably any of you, or email you. A lot of times it's the people that are calling that don't like the aggressive dog, that don't like the, you know, 25 cats that are populating their property. So I hope, based on the feedback that I have gotten and that we got from the advisory committee, that more people other than just the animal advocates will step up for this.
And that's what I meant to say. Right? We need more people paying the tax. That's a voluntary tax.
Absolutely.
I'll not vote. I guess what I'm trying to say is I will not vote to increase taxes on the Faulkner County taxpayers to pay to operate a shelter.
I will echo exactly, nearly verbatim, what Mr. Sack has said. I agree.
Okay, I just wanted to remind y'all that Sheriff Riles is very much in support of this, is what he said, because they don't want to spend their time trying to, you know, crowd animals when that can be done. And this project would really help the officers in the sheriff's office. I think Andy Schock said that too. All right.
Sure, yeah.
All right.
I'm about to move on.
Judge
Dawson. Madam Chair, I just wanted to, it was not my intent to speak on this subject tonight, but with where the narrative has kind of gone, I think I just want to make it clear to emphasize to this committee where my administration will come in on this issue and both the construction and the continuing operation. Is that I echo that. It is, I will not support, I've made that very clear from day one, not going to support using funds other than the volunteer tax to operate it. The ARP funds are multi-generational money. It's a little bit different situation. If we can have a set aside to help build this thing and get it off the ground, give them the stake that they have, sans the money that we've spent either on spay and neuter or what other program, purchase of the shelter facility that we have, that we intend to remodel, then that'll give them a stake. Should give them at least 3 years to operate if they didn't raise an additional dime. At least that's my rough math. I don't want to be too harsh with that. But I've made it clear, and I'll repeat it now, I will veto any request for funding from County General for operations for the future. And here's why, philosophically. Our public voted for that volunteer tax, and they're voting every year that they give that volunteer tax at the level of public funding they want that thing to have. Now, does that let us off the hook, even as elected officials? No, not really. If they have fundraisers, we ought to be there and help them. But it's incumbent upon that very passionate, very vocal, and probably more in number than we realize. We could probably talk to the sheriff or Deputy Kelly about that. I know that we get a number of calls in our office. I get calls and texts and emails about animals. I think I got one yesterday. but it should be able to operate itself given a 3-year stake. If a business model cannot succeed under those parameters, I don't know many small business owners who get 3 years of funding and just free game. Right there. And so it'll be up to us to examine, we in public office at that time, that if that is a failing business model, and we're going to have to regroup and either decrease in size, down scope it to match that volunteer revenue stream, then just there would be nothing off the table as far as I'm concerned. But there is a continuing revenue stream. We ought to make use of that. I think this is a good use of it. I will say that we just got these bids this afternoon. We've not vetted them. You are all familiar with, you know, lowest responsible bidder and all the vetting that we're required by law to do for the bids that we open, and we'll do that. We'll do that beginning tomorrow. And so we're not prepared to come to you today with a hard ask. That would be a little bit unfair of you considering the other things. We're going to take up detention center expansion here shortly. And really the focus is on how do we most effectively spend the $10 million of unencumbered ARP monies. And others in the case of the detention center. And so we're not coming here today to ask you, hey, set aside a 1.33 or whatever that figure comes out to be. But we in front of the Courts and Public Safety Committee, which has had this issue throughout the years, we wanted you to see where we're at with real world info. And so that's as current as it is. We opened those bids this afternoon, and we appreciate your due diligence and consideration. Any questions you have, I'm available now or certainly in the coming days. Anybody in my administration. I know Justice Coates has done a lot of work on it, and I know she's open to help in any way. If you have any questions, don't call her, call my office. We've still got a respect for you, but we'll get you some answers if you have any questions in the coming days. So with that, again, this was just an information share. You're owed that, and that's where we're at. I expect it to pick up speed quickly.
Awesome.
It's up to the chair.
Justice Gray, go ahead.
I think that we all agree, if we want to get people behind this, it would be nice if y'all can release these two shots and get an article in the paper about
it. I don't have a problem with that. Do you have a problem?
No.
Chair? I don't have a problem with that. I think that's, you see some real stuff there.
Yeah, visuals are really helpful.
Yeah, so... Yeah, I will say the bids, if you didn't pick up the bid amounts, the bids were very close, very close. So that gives you some comfort that, they were on the money. It's just what the market is. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. And so I'm convinced with the sort of the recursive process of where we had numbers that we tossed out to you guys, the numbers that we were given, which were much higher than this, more than once throughout the course, this even prior to my time here, that where we are today is probably just about the best approach that we're supposed to have here. I'm comfortable with that. So I'm available for any questions either now or later. Madam Chair?
Are there any other questions or comments?
Yeah, I just want to say I appreciate y'all's work on this. I know probably we all feel lots of questions and criticism and hate and discontent on this issue. The sooner we get it resolved, the better.
Agreed. That was the other thing I was going to add to the bids. They also gave a timeline, and the lowest bid was the NBMC, and it was the estimated time of construction was 180 days. So once the money is allocated and construction begins, they estimated that to take about approximately 180 days.
Quick question.
Yeah,
I'm just curious as for the floor plan. Know if any industry professionals have had input on the construction or the design of that floor plan, or is it just all straight from the architects?
So we actually, in the last months of Judge Baker's term, hired Animal Shelter Planners of America as a subcontractor, and they came in and worked with the architect, took our demographic information, which was pretty exhaustive, and then analyzed that, and then worked up the floor plan. The architect has really modified it for the building and per some of the specifications that we have given back to them. So to answer your question is yes.
And they've given consistent feedback throughout the process?
Yes.
And they've seen this final floor plan?
I don't know that they have seen this final floor plan. I know they have seen one of the recent reiterations of the floor plan. They may have. I just can't honestly speak
sure,
to
sure.
if they've seen this one.
Okay. And Minister Higgins and Justice Pearson, the floor plan that Shelter Planners of America came up with, to be completely honest, was completely out of our budget. We couldn't afford it. And so this floor plan is more of what we felt like that we could afford. And so, and when I say we, I mean the committee, as of the Animal Shelter Committee under Judge Baker. And so when the committee kind of disbanded after Judge Baker left office, when I started working on this a little bit more and we started narrowing down, cutting it, all the way down, we did work with Shauna Osborne, who is our animal control director, or has been, for the Conway shelter, and she has definitely had quite a bit of input as things have gone on, and she's worked with Emily and Rick Sal's office.
Okay. I'll add this, Justice Pearson, a little more tongue-in-cheek than anything, but I took a little criticism the last part of last year because I wasn't sharing a lot of the information. I'll tell you why. I wasn't going to bring a $4 million plane to the port.
Sure. No, I appreciate it.
Yes, Justice Bohaski.
Can you talk about some of the services that may be provided with this type of shelter you have?
what kind of, you know what I'm saying? I see maybe the word adopt on the side of it. You just talk generally about the community center.
Justice Higgins?
Like, what's happening there?
Or Justice Higgins?
Yeah, so
here's a throwback.
It'll work. So, Justice Lehowski, a big part of this is the primary focus at this point in the shelter is to support our law enforcement community, specifically the sheriff's office. So we primarily, it's for animals, aggressive animals. We all know, we hear the calls, everything, the sheriff's department gets a call. They go and try to write a ticket to somebody that's not doing right by their animals. They get to a certain point, per our animal control ordinance, it's time to lay hands on them, and there's nothing they can do. Bless his heart, we had Jared Wiley that was taking care of us, who recently passed away. That was a resource that we had lost, a very valuable resource, but primarily for that. So will there be adopting opportunities? Yes. Probably early on, and again, the bid is less than 6 hours old, so we're talking pre-existing, but probably there will not be surrender opportunities early on, because I think it will probably be filled pretty quickly dealing with law enforcement support. Once we get all of that operational, then we anticipate hiring a director if we move forward with this plan, and that director will be really the subject matter expert that help us. I've been doing this, as far as helping with the animal shelter for a long time. I am nowhere near a subject matter expert. I learn more and more every day what I don't know.
That was my biggest concern is how do we take care of the sheriff's office on a sustainable operating budget and taking care of those violent and aggressive animals, not so much being a community center or being a place for surrender, but how do we take care of those core, those base level public safety issues that we face?
Yeah, I'll reiterate, the primary focus is to support the sheriff's office.
Justice Coates?
Yes, sir.
If I may ask, how much has the county spent on plans, architect fees, all of those things up to this point? How much more, I guess two questions. How much have we spent thus far for the plans, the architect, et cetera, what we're seeing here? And how much more do we expect to spend before we get some type of formal funding request?
So I think at this point, Justice Kendrick, I'll have to look and see. There is a fee based on the cost that this came in. It's a fee based on the percentage of the cost. Last estimate that I saw is going to be around $70,000that will come out of the judge's budget. I don't anticipate any additional fees after that.
Okay. So we've spent $70,000 out of the judge's budget, but we haven't approved anything from annual funding to pay for this.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
And before we move on, I want to go back to Justice Lehowski's question a little bit, and I want to share my experience. When I started on the committee for the animal shelter, it was a $4 million project. And since Judge Dodson has come into office and him and I had a conversation, there's been a paradigm shift. As much as so many of us would love to see, and when I say us, I mean animal people, I'm pretty open that is definitely me, but we also have to be realistic in what the people of Faulkner County are desiring, and what the people, I love animals, but our citizens have to come first, and that paradigm shift has happened in the last few, the process of coming to this drawing. It is not perfection. It is not a rescue center. It is not always going to be pretty, as much as I would love for that to be the case. There are many, many generationally feral animals in our county. Our sheriff's department can probably attest to that. So is this perfection in what so many animal advocates have wanted for years? Absolutely not. That's not this, but it is progress. And that's where we're leaning, is we really would like to see progress over perfection. And we have to start somewhere. We have to crawl before we can walk. That's part of why the build-out is like it is. You know, could we have asked for more money and built more shelter, animal welfare unit? We could have asked for that, but could we have operated it? Probably not. So we wanted to start small. So that's where that paradigm shift has come in over the last
6 to 8 months, 10 months that I have been involved.
You mentioned working with John Osborne on the design for this. Have there been any conversations with her as far as a partnership at all with the city of Conway in some sort of control, animal shelter control situation that you're aware of?
You know, Justice Lahowski, I have advocated for collaboration between the city and the county for at least 10 years, and it's a challenge. Not because the city doesn't want to work with, we work with them on a lot of different areas. We will be working with them with 911. We work with them in law enforcement. And then there are some things that don't work well together. As much as we've tried with this with the shelter, budget constraints, their city council, it hasn't come to fruition. So is it discussed? I'd say quite frequently. Have we been able to work out the kinks? We have not.
And Ms. Osborne has recently retired, so she is no longer administrator over there. So that comes into play, too. Do I have any comments, Ms. Clausen?
Just a couple of quick things. My grandson's started playing football, and I'm missing that, so I'm going to talk fast. I'm thrilled. Y'all have done wonderful. I wanted to mention JR, he passed away, and y'all, he was the Faulkner County Animal Shelter for the last 20 years, you know, as far as so much has done. There's a lot of things he has that belong to Faulkner County that we're going to have to find some room, because I know Pat's going to be cleaning things out, but I mean, it's left over from the 2019 flood, you know, Epcart, when we went in and did that. We have pens and crates and that kind of thing. So that's something we need to look at. The other thing that we need to think about is, I guess it's real important. It's slipping my mind. But anyway, JR was wonderful. I think there needs to be a little plaque on putting his name. We are all thrilled with this, and our Friends of Faulkner County Animal Shelter has $45,000 that we have saved to go in on that, and part of it was going to be for the cats, you know. So anyway, we do have several fundraisers in the mix, but we're waiting until we can get something like this so that we can sell, you know, like they did at Haven, so that we can sell some things. It's what we would like to do, if y'all agree with that, but, you know, there might be some people who'd like to furnish everything in the vets area, or in, you know, crates, or in the medicine, you know, like that. So anyway, there's things we can do when you all give us permission to do it, and I'm just having cartwheels. So this is a dream. I'm kind of worried about it, because I said I think God gave me this purpose in my life, and I think when you're through with your purpose, you die. So if that happens, I'm sorry.
I'm sure we're still going to need you. It's awesome. Can't bow out just yet.
Yeah, that's good.
Any additional comments, questions, concerns before we move on? All right. We will go ahead and move forward with the agenda, which is the jail expansion discussion. Judge Dawson, I will turn it back over to you.
Thank you, and I would ask our sheriff to come up here too, and we'll tag team you. Give Sheriff this mic. I promise I sound contagious, and I'm not. I'm no longer contagious. I was running a little long in the day for my energy, and I'm ready for bed. But I'm missing my dear mother's birthday party right now, so I know she's not listening, but happy birthday, Mom. But she understands this is an important issue. The sheriff, his administration, me and my administration are here before you today, basically because the Courts and Public Safety Committee has taken up this issue through the years, and it's a public safety issue. We're talking about our jail and detention center and its capacity. And so we're here standing here today, Sheriff, how about that?
Thank you.
To talk to you about what will be the largest capital expenditure project in Faulkner County government history. Okay, so just understand the gravity of that. Well, we're going to, not tonight, but we want to update you on where we are with our progress on determining what's the right path. again, because you're owed that. You're our Courts and Public Safety Committee. We're here prepared to tell you we're going to be recommending a jail expansion over adjacent to Unit 2, our large minimum security facility. It's over behind the Justice Building. We've got plenty of room over there. And we want to expand, just to kind of give you the punchline at the end, and then we'll unpack it. Expand by 192-bed brand-new facility over there adjacent to Unit 2, which would allow us to do a few things. Number one, close Unit 1 adult facility over here, former Sheriff's Shop. Close that down for a number of reasons. It's inefficient. We're always spending money. I know you were always having to come ask for hinges and doors and latches and all manner of things over there. And that was 10 years ago. And it's not the most efficient modern layout of a jail. All right. So we know the sheriff has been running more than capacity for our detainee count for many months. And so being conservative with the people's money, we're trying to figure out what does it make sense to build. Well, we know that we got to have the money to build it, and we got to have the money to operate it. So that's where we started. We know that our consultant told us, okay, the most efficient layout for a modern jail is a hub and spoke. This is all stuff that you've heard before, but just for purposes of recap for our new JPs. And our consultant tells us that the head count or the personnel count is optimized when you have spokes, when they're at the hub in a control center and they manage hubs that number no more or no less than 64 beds. You lose efficiencies if you go above or below. And so that's what we started with. Okay, well, we build one wing, that's 64 beds. You build two, that's 128. It's been a while since I worked over at Axiom, but I think the next increment up is 192, and then the next is 256. All right, so we just began right there. Blank sheet of paper. We got with the Sheriff's Department and his staff, and they did a lot of yeoman's work trying to come up with more of those numbers about what are their operating costs. They crunched some things, gave it to us. We came back to them with some more requests and had several recursive conversations and meetings and exchanges of info there, and got where we thought, okay, we think we've got a handle on what it takes to operate ongoing once we build the thing. Okay, so then we armed with that, we said, okay, well, let's figure out how much money we can cost to spend on building. What can we build? Okay, our consultant told us $100,000 a bed. Just count on it. $100,000 a bed. I didn't believe him. I asked, honestly, Randy and Tom, we got to go back that up. We're just going to take that as the gospel. And they went and got me two pieces of information that got me comfortable real quick. And that is, Garland County built the jail 7 years ago and came in at $85,000 a bed. You know, okay, so we got inflation now. We know what the market rates are doing, commercial construction and all that. Supply chain, and okay. And then they told me that Governor Sanders' estimate for the 3,000-bed facility she's proposing, $100,000 a bed. So that tells us one thing. We cannot comfortably answer to estimating less than that, right? We're going to try like the Dickens to come in cheaper than that if you guys do fund the construction of this facility. We'll try to save where we can. We'll try to do some in-kind stuff where we can and all the usual stuff when we undertake projects like that. And so, all right, 64 beds. How much money is that? $6.4 million. 128 beds, $12.8 million. 192 beds, $19.2 million. 256 beds, $25.6 million. All right, so I know, I'm familiar, you guys too, I know that we could afford to build a $6.5 million facility. We're dealing with some ARP money for one. We know we could build a 128-bed facility for $13 million. We could afford to come up with that money. All right, when you start getting to 192 beds, you're talking, that's $20 million. It's $19.2 million. Every penny of public money matters, but when you start approaching $20 million is when I personally start pumping the brakes and saying, we're going to have some solid numbers here before we can realistically go to the sheriff and say, hey, I think we could build this. And so Wait, Chris, no, I'll go through those in just a second for you. We looked at 25.6 million. There's just no way. I'm just going to level with you. We can't sell out and become new detention center facility America and come up with that money. We just can't come up with that and be comfortable with who we are and what we do. So we backed down from there and said, what about 192 beds, Sheriff? What does that do for us? Can we close Unit 1 Adult? He says, yes, we, there's 118 beds over there. You well know, I report every month, we're 90 beds over, 99 people over. We're throwing out mats and all of this. And we stepped back and said, well, if we could afford 192 new beds, close 118 here, what does that do to our headcount? Because that's where our costs are coming. That's the biggest chunk of our operating costs right there. So, well, we count the number of personnel we have over here operating the adult portion of Unit 1 facility and figure out, well, how many does it take to run over there with a hub and spoke system? Whether you've got one spoke or four, it comes out to 16, I think, if my memory is correct, which was less than what it takes over here at Unit 1 Adult. We're not coming to you saying we're going to save personnel. I don't think that would be prudent for me to stand before you to say or me to recommend to the sheriff, to be honest with you. We asked the sheriff, are you sure you could do it without an increase in personnel? That's the biggest scare, right? Because we're going to have to come up with a budget. Day one, before day one, there's got to be a budget there if that thing runs. And as a matter of fact, the rest of the county's got to run too at the same time. So when we looked at that, we thought, well, what about 128 beds? Well, we can't really, we could do that and close Unit 1, but it really doesn't do anything for us. We've spent all this money, and we've gotten only 10 new headcount. So that's not really realistic. We just can't, why even undertake that? So we centered on 192 and said, can we come up with the money, and what does it really do to our other operating costs besides personnel? Well, if we're roughly the same number of detainees the sheriff's got to have, it ought to be roughly the same amount of food, right? It'll be roughly the same amount of health care, which is another huge expense of ours that we expect to continue to rise year over year, just based on outside world and realities of detention center health care. The sheriff could talk way more about than me. So we know that contract's probably going to continue to increase despite our best negotiating over time. But we got to keep that in mind. All right. Well, without digging too much into the weeds, which is beyond the purpose of tonight, we believe we could build 192 over there if we can get the money together and afford to operate it, which is, for me, the hugest, the largest concern that keeps me awake at night, knowing that I have to recommend, I have to convince the sheriff what's right and live with it, and we'll all be here to answer for this later. Because once that facility's there, it's there. As a matter of fact, once we turn the dirt, our future is set, and we're all in it together. So I feel comfortable we can run it at 192-bed expansion for an initial phase, building in expansion capability for the remaining 64 beds once we, once our finances allowed us to do that, and once we saw what the governor's plan really yields. And I don't think anybody knows. Probably Sheriff Schock could probably tell us more about that than what we could. And I know the sheriff could more than I could about what that's going to do to the system, the parole system. Is it just going to fill up in 3 months? Or is that really going to offload from our sheriff the detainees he's having to keep? We don't have the answers to that. Let's not bet our future on an answer we don't have. So can we afford $19.2 million to build? Yeah, we can, and here's how. You have heard my proposed set-aside for you guys to consider of $5 million of unencumbered. That's part of a $10 million unencumbered ARP funds. So we know we can afford that, right? That's $5 million. We're trying to work our way to $19.2 million. All right, we know that we can borrow 5 years and get $5 million more. That's what we did on the Justice Building. We did it responsibly. You guys paid it off while I was gone, as a matter of fact. We paid it off early. That gets us to $10 million. We know we can make that payment because you guys appropriate $1 million in capital improvement fund each year. That's what you set aside responsibly. That would be the revenue stream that would pay the Amendment 78 financing once we dipped into that money and began incurring interest. All right? Which, by the way, would not be until the end of construction. We'd spend that money last, right? Just like good stewards of money. But we're at $10 million, all right? We know that we have $5 million at the end of this year in capital improvement fund funding that you guys set aside every year. You've been accruing. You knew you were going to need it, and you set that aside. There'll be $5 million there we could count on. That gets us to 50. And this is where we have to start grabbing from here and there. And this is when you start getting sensitive to, can we afford this, or is this a stretch? All right? So we know that we've got $300,000 of ARP restricted funds that we could comfortably use based on what we believe will be spent out of that, what you've already allocated, what you expect to allocate from here on out of that $14 million. The $300,000 we couldn't just spend on anything because it is restricted by the U.S. Treasury regs. We have to be careful with that, but we're convinced that we can legally spend that on HVAC and filtration. And we're on solid ground there. We'll defend that all day long to prevent spread of disease. I mean, you get that filtration system in there, you don't want everybody to be breathing everybody's unfiltered breath. So we're good with that. So that gets us to 15.3. There is $700,000, drawing a blank.
Coronavirus relief.
CARES Act money on hand. Unspent, unallocated CARES Act money, which was the initial funding prior to ARP money for our new JPs. So, Sheriff, that's $16 million that we've gotten to. All right, so where do we get the other money from? I'm having a look at my notes. Oh, you guys allocate $1 million a year in capital improvement fund. And much like what we did back in 14 with the Justice Building, is we had the money on hand, built the building, and then used the funding while we were building to accrue in the budget. So as a matter of fact, you're about to begin these 24 budgets, and you'll be asked, as you are every year, to set aside $1 million for capital improvement. That'd be another $1 million, because it's not going to be spent before the end of 24. And so that's another $1 million you can tack on there. So that gets us to 17. As a matter of fact, it's probably not going to be spent before the end of 25. Certainly not before you've appropriated it at the end of 24. And keeping in mind, we're going to spend those dimes last, because those accrue interest. And so we'll spend it last. That's what we did. As a matter of fact, Tom's very adept at that, at managing the finances of that to kind of optimize what our funds are doing. We did that in 2014 and long after I was gone. And that's what we could do to get us to $18 million. So two of the intervening $1 million capital improvement fund allocations that you do every year, before we have to start paying the interest back, essentially, is what that amounts to. Against state team, we need $1.2 million more. Here's what I recommend. With the remaining unallocated or unused proposed set-aside of the $10 million that I have come to you with, of the $10 million unencumbered ARP money, there are some other areas of that money. What I'm suggesting is, at this point, we don't think the $1 million that I proposed for you guys to set aside for 911 PSAP consolidation, we don't think we'll spend all $1 million of that. And that's not money that was sitting around for that. That's the $10 million that you have the ability to spend on one thing or another. Before we were comfortable with what that figure would be, we asked you, okay, be prepared to set aside $1 million of that for 911 PSAP consolidation. There's a whole host of hardware the sheriff's got, the center's got, patch software and stuff like that. I'll get out of my league pretty quick with that stuff. But we feel pretty comfortable that it's not going to take all of that now. People who I trust believe it's not going to take the full $1 million. So you get part of that $1.2 million from that. There are still some other areas that we could consider taking that from out of the $10 million proposed set-asides that I recommended to you guys. One of them being the levy federal fund matching. We don't know how much that's going to be. It's likely to be more than that, but if we need it, that's, you know how near and dear that $1 million levy set aside is to my heart, and I'm coming to you saying if it's needed, that would have my blessing. I would hope we would come in and not have to use that, to be honest with you. I can't speak for our federal delegation, but I am going to be surprised if we don't find support for further study and then construction, whatever that may be that the engineers, the civil engineers come up with, for greater protection than we have with our current levy. And I'll just leave it with that. As a matter of fact, there was 3 issues ago, there was an article in the Arkansas Business about Governor Asa Hutchinson's study that he funded on the levy system in Arkansas. It's known that there were 17 recommendations to be done and not known whether any of them were done. And so I'm not comfortable with that. I'm asking you not to be comfortable with that and not to let go of the rope. The levy system, the levy issue in Faulkner County is not going away, and that's going to resurface toward the end of this year, which is sort of tied to federal, potential federal monies, and I better leave it at that. So that gets us to some combination of those last two will get us to $19.2 million. We try to come in under that. There may also be some savings somewhere by opening that new facility up. I'm not ready to commit to you on that at this point. We haven't recommended that to the sheriff. But I'll tell you, the biggest ask that my administration had of the sheriff and his administration was, can you live with 192 beds? It's not 256 beds or 500 beds or whatever, and you might still have to throw 5 or 10 mats down in your peakest peak periods. And I don't know what their numbers are right now, but he might have to go. I mean, if you open the thing, you might have to throw 5 out right now. But we do know that the governor is building. We know that we have peaks and valleys in detainee count, and we hope that 192 would be enough. At the end of the day, my opinion is that's all we can afford. Sheriff, I would like to give you an opportunity to speak. I know that I covered a lot of it, but first, I appreciate your consideration, the difficulty of the job that you and your staff and entire administration have to do, managing detainees that you have no choice whether they walk through that door or not is a tough ask, and you have no choice in it. Just appreciate, you know, the effort that you've given, the openness that you've displayed between your administration and ours has been exemplary. I hope that the viewing public and those who are here today can appreciate that, because I think it signals good things for the future. But anyway, Sheriff, with that.
Judge, I appreciate it. I guess this is working. I'm not sure.
Thank you very much. And, man, I appreciate the cooperation between the judge's office and the sheriff's department. It hadn't always been that way. I had a good rapport with Judge Baker. And, I'm glad that you're here. That's what I got to say. There's no way I could add to what anything that you had just described perfectly of what we're looking at. What I can tell you is with our inmates, the ones that we're seeing right now that was issues, one of the things I stopped, let me back up. The inmates, the majority of the ones that are in the maximum security facility, the majority of them are waiting to be adjudicated. That just tells you about growth in Faulkner County. The majority of them now is that. There's probably only 10, maybe, that are ADCs that's in our maximum security facility. But I have stopped all the 90-day sanctioners that are violent. The ones that get sentenced here or get put here by, picked up by probation or parole, we have stopped them from coming in because legally, really, they're supposed to be going to AAC, and that's where all your 90-day and 180-day sanctions, as I think Andy could probably contest to, that's where they should be going, but that's where they're going now. And they are not coming in, so they're not crowding us. Very few as far as ADCs that's dealing with our maximum security. Total across the county, across our jail, we probably still carry about 50 to 60 ADCs in general. We had 15 taken out yesterday, taken to ADC. So that left us with 188 in our maximum security facility that's designed for 118. And so that's the only thing that I can really harp on or give you some kind of clue. We're doing everything we can to try to get the ones that I can absolutely keep out of our jail. We're trying to do that. We're working diligently with our circuit judges. We're working with our district judges. And our Captain Huffman is doing a great job of making sure that phone call gets to ADC. If they don't make a run within a week or two, I call down there. And they have been readily to respond, and they'll come and pick up 10, 15, about that number, and which just takes a little bit, a thimble out of our population. We are extremely overcrowded, but one of the biggest things is what we're dealing with. This is so much safer for our detention officers. The environment that they are in with the overcrowdedness that they have to deal with when they open a cell door and you have a large day room with doors in the back for individual cells. When they walk in, the individual cells are all housed. They all got bunks and they all got people in those bunks. Problem is we got sleds out on the floor that are just lined up, and that's where the remainder of them are sleeping on sleds on the floor, which is a plastic bed, to say. We still have that capability of doing that here. With 192 beds, we take them over there. If we get to that peak, like you said, maybe we have to pull a few sleds out. Lord knows we've got plenty of them, so we want to buy that. I'm going to shut up now, but what I want to do is entertain questions that maybe I'm not addressing, or maybe I can get some direction toward you with your questions.
Is this building built in such a way that beds could be added or cells could be added later on?
That's correct, yeah. The building will be a complete square building, completely covered. There will be one section of it that will not be finished out, but it will be plumbed, concrete, and it will be ready for an area of an additional 64 more beds at any given time whenever we feel like we were able to accomplish that. So, yes, it will be built out to where we can add those at any time.
And I would just add, Madam Chair, if that's possible, I would just add that we view this as a phase one, as a part of a healthy strategic vision for our facilities, knowing that we'd be tied up with Amendment 78 financing for at least 5 years, right, from first payment, unless we're fortunate enough to pay it off early. But we would plan for 5 years. So what's phase two? Well, if the facts dictate to us that we need 64 more beds, then if that's our highest priority, then that's what we ought to do at that time. But this builds some flexibility in for us so that if that's not our highest priority, the state gets its stuff in order and are not inundating us with people and it's manageable, I would love nothing more than phase two of our strategic facilities plan to include, rather than building 64 more max security beds over there, well, let's move juvenile over here and raise the entire unit one. And how about we move the sheriff's office over there so, hey, they're in one spot, not two, for everything from subpoenas and transports and all of that. Let's get the Justice Center all in one spot, the criminal justice system there in one spot. And I think that's something that we ought to look at in the future. I don't think we should have hard answers on that yet, but I think the situation would tell us what we should do next with our capital improvement money. You got to set aside $1 million a year for that. And we need to have a plan for that, with contingencies. And, if the criminal justice system, the system of jails is not in any better shape, in 3, 4, 5 years, well, let's start saving up and we'll have 64 beds. But, getting juvenile and getting the sheriff's office over there is not something that the sheriff's been asking for. It's just something that I see that I think we ought to be serious about it, to get them all in one spot. So to be clear, the sheriff could have been asking for a shiny new object, sheriff's office over there, one day be named after him or something, but he hadn't wanted to do that. He's like, we're overcrowded. We need new beds. And so, but at some point, I think we've got to think about that. I really do. Good question.
Any additional questions?
Sheriff, could you talk about how it's going to help with the transporting of your maximum security prisoners to from the court appearances and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, you know, outside of district court, but as far as circuit court, it's all on the same grounds. So it's one campus. Logistically, it's a nightmare right now. And everything, something as simple as serving a warrant is a logistical nightmare for, and has been. It has been forever. And to have our maximum security facility right there, the criminal justice building is right there on campus. And a lot safer, less travel with the inmates, and all around.
You talk about the safety for your detention officers, which I think we already discussed their low rate of pay already. I think we, this court, this committee, definitely owes those guys to provide the safest possible work environment we could. But would you also say that this facility would be safer for the inmates?
Oh, absolutely. Hands down, the way this is designed, from the podium where the control center is at, you can physically see every door, every window, every area of this jail from that centralized location. It's two-story, and you have eyes on your detention officers as they're walking from the control center. So the inmates, ones that are in medical need, the mental ill issues, handicapped. Those, we have specific pods to put them in, cells to put them in, where we have visual line of sight from the control center. So everything designed about this, around this, is based on the safety of not only detention, but of the inmates as well.
One last question, if I can. In the past, I've heard Ms. Woolley address the issue that the state has noted your overcrowded jails and kind of given us a pass. Ms. Woolley, correct me if I'm wrong, because they knew we were overcrowded and we didn't have the money. But I distinctly remember one time you telling either this committee or the court, I can't remember which, that it was your belief that if the state knew we had the option to build a new jail and we didn't take advantage of those funds and put it to that purpose, they might not be so lenient on us with the overcrowding issue in the future.
No, that's correct. And Sterling Penix is the one and that come inspected. I've worked and I talked diligently, you know, with him, know him well, and he was one of the ones that came, and that's why we wound up getting a letter actually to Judge Baker and myself. And so if we had the opportunity and nothing is, if we don't at least address or move in the right direction of trying to get that, they have warned us about, you know, exactly what you said.
I appreciate both of you working together on this. Everybody's worked on this to make this come forward. I am 100% in support of building this to make it better for you, your officers, the county, and the inmates.
Well, and this does justice. I mean, we are at a point. We're at a breaking point. And honestly, we have a lot of work to do, even if we move ahead on this for the next 3 years. And what does that look like? Ankle monitors, doing the thing, the ones that we can let out, opening up space. But what that does is when your home gets broken into, or a drug addict gives your child drugs, or something like some crime like that, those are the ones who we're not going to have room for because they're not violent. You know, and so those go right back on the street to commit the crimes again. And we never want to get there. I never even want to talk about that. I want places to hold those people here. But if this continues to escalate in our Unit 1 facility, we're going to have to do something to create room to house them and let the less violent or the nonviolent back out, and it's a shame. It's just a shame. I hate it, but it's reality.
That's correct. That's correct.
And the number amount here that you're talking about is just price per square foot compared to some other facilities. Is that right?
Sure.
Does that include, like we're talking about here, there's a 20% furnishing cost. Is that all inclusive, or is it just the construction phase? Is there going to be an additional 20% furnishing cost for a $19 million facility as well?
I would not expect that to be beyond $100,000 per bed. No. Sure, that's where you go at a conceptual phase. Hey, you're supposed to use $100,000 a bed, and so that's where we're at thus far. We get more detail, obviously, as we got more detailed plans.
Okay. And then I guess my other question is, you know, I've always been under the understanding that a large part of the overcrowding problem at Unit 1 currently is due to ADC inmates. Is that a correct perception that historically that a large
historically, it is a combination of the ADC inmates, which is the only ones we got that we can actually do something with that we're holding and try to get them to the Department of Corrections and get them out of our way and continue to do that. That has always been a big element, a part of the element. But it's like I said a while ago, now, over the last year, we're seeing a little bit of conversion to where the ADCs, well, the ADCs are still there. They're still the ones that we are trying to get rid of. And there is a large number of them. But what we're seeing happening within our maximum security facility is are the ones that's non-adjudicated. The ones who are in that facility has not been to court and are waiting on a bed down there. They just haven't been to court yet. We're seeing that rise. And that's where we're at now, right now, and that's what I brought up, attempted to bring up while ago for understanding.
Okay.
So that is growing.
I just ask because I'm curious as to what would prevent a similar overcrowding situation occurring here. You know, there's bed space for 194, but you start throwing more mats on the floor, you get up into 250 or whatever, and then our operating all of a sudden it's like, well, we said we could operate this on the current budget. Now we got 50 to 60 more folks that it's overcrowded again, and that just is a concern for me. Is would we still be able to operate it on the current budget if all of a sudden this facility gets overcrowded also? I guess. And I just it's just an open-ended question. Do you think that this will get overcrowded as well? Is there anything that would give you any indication that it wouldn't?
Well, I'm sure in the growth of the county over years, the population growth in general is going to grow inside your jails as well. So, yeah, at some point, there's no way I can calibrate how long that would be, 5 years, 10 years, or 15 years. At a 256-bed facility, if that's what we was to go to, I would feel confident in that. That would last us at least 10 years down the road before we would get to a position of overcrowdedness of where we're at today in Unit 1. I think that would buy us 10 more years down the road. At some point, would we have to pull out sleds and put them out here in their day rooms, yeah, whatever you want to call them. And, yeah, that potential's always there. But, you know, as we move forward and there are things, there are programs, there are the management of how you operate with between your circuit judges and your district judges, of being able to reduce, trying to keep a reduction down. And our court systems, if our court systems was COVID, I think, is probably one of the biggest factors of why we're seeing what we're seeing right now. And, you know, when we get out of this, maybe it declines a little bit. But I believe that if our court systems was able to adjudicate them faster, and then ADC had a place to keep them, who knows, in the next 5 or 10 years, this could be a 20-year project, you know.
Sure, sure.
You know what I'm saying? So.
Yeah, I understand. And then I had just one last question. Just check that out. I wrote a couple of thoughts down here. Have you had any conversation about what you might do with the current Unit 1 if you did close down Unit 1 adult?
Yes, our intention is to, we can't tear it down because juvenile is on the ground floor, right? So we've got to mothball that. I think the governor of that situation kind of govern or hold back maybe loss of control of expenses, if that's where you're going with that, would be that, look, it would take, I don't know, 15 or 20 personnel to open it back up, and we just wouldn't be able to afford that. So I think we mothball that. I'll just use that term loosely. Leave it vacant where the adult max population is. We still have the juvenile facility there open. It uses different personnel than what we use with the adult population. And there's some logistics we have to work through, the cook, you know, the meals and laundry and stuff like that, which we've got covered with our concept here. But I think the goal is, we're headed to somewhere with Unit 1, and that is to move juvenile over there at some point, as soon as possible. And I know that the restrictions with juveniles are, you know, pretty, you know, we've got some pretty strong restrictions about where and how we build a juvenile facility in the vicinity of an adult population, so. Sure. We would scrutinize that, obviously, with great attention. We don't want to take on known expenses in the face of unknown revenue. And we're not here to make money, but it's something, you know, before we tore Unit 1 down, hey, we'd be willing to look at it.
But we're here to pay for things responsibly, and that's all I'm talking about. I appreciate the proposal. I think there's a lot more to dig into this. It's a step in the right direction. I'm not against the idea at all. This would be one of the most important things that we've all dealt with, and I look forward to digging into it, and just thank you all for doing what you've done on it.
Thank you. Thank you. Further questions?
Thank you, Judge.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sheriff.
Thank you.
All right, with that, are there any announcements? All right, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
Motion.
All those in favor? Right. You're adjourned.
But I'm gonna give you